stupid amount of years on it. Okay, this is Jim Boning of the Center for History of Chemistry. I'm speaking with Dr. Bruno H. Zinn at the Anaheim Hilton on the 9th of September, 1986. Dr. Zinn, you were born on the 31st of October, 1920, in Woodstock, New York. Could you tell me something about your father and mother, names, occupation?
Yeah, I'd be glad to. First, let me talk about the Woodstock. That's where we lived. I was actually born in a hospital in the next town, Kingston.
Oh, okay.
So that, my birth certificate says Kingston.
I see.
That was 10 miles away. But we lived in Woodstock. Woodstock has gotten some notoriety since as an artist colony, which it was at that time, but not so well known. My father was a sculptor. My mother was a writer, novelist.
And their names?
My father's name was Bruno Lewis, L-O-U-I-S. L-O-U-I-S. Sam, and my mother's name, maiden name, was Louise Seymour, S-E-Y-M-O-U-R, Hasbrook, H-A-S-B-R-O-U-C-K.
Do you have any brothers or sisters?
No, I was the only child.
I see. What was it like growing up in Woodstock as a young boy?
Well, it was, as a young boy, of course I wasn't in a position to appreciate much of the culture that was going on, and the main thing I remember from as a young boy is that I grew up more or less in the woods.
Mm.
It was, my father had bought an abandoned farm well, 8 years or something before I was born, and he found that a good place to carry on his sculpture. And it was 2 miles out of the town of Woodstock itself, actually, on the side of a mountain. Very nice rural environment. And then I went to a very local one-room school with an average of about 15 pupils in all grades until I went to high school.
Because of the activities of your mother and father, did you have any visitors that you remember to your home?
Yeah, they came from time to time, not a great many. There were, of course, a number of artists and writers and musicians in Woodstock, and we knew a lot of them socially.
I understand you played the clarinet, is that correct?
I started to pick that up after I went away to boarding school, and my roommate started playing the clarinet, and I thought this looked like fun, so I picked it up too at the same time.
Were there any teachers in your grade school days, or anyone else in the community that had any influence on you?
Well, of course, there was one teacher in this one-room school all the time I was there, except for the first year, I think there was another teacher. The whole time I was there, it was just one teacher. A woman, she ran the whole place very efficiently, and was a nice, sympathetic person. And I can't say that she influenced me specifically in any particular way, but she certainly didn't make any problems either. The nice thing about being in a one-room school is you hear everything that goes on. So when I was in the lower grades, I heard what the upper grades were doing, and that's, I think, helped me get through a lot faster than might in a more structured environment.
If I might stop for a moment, I think I'm having a problem with your what develops.
I could perhaps move closer.
Oh, now that's okay. Yeah. Now you're working, all right. Want to try something?
Okay. How's
that's,
that?
That's good. Yeah.
Must have been a bad contact.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
Okay.
Did you have any interest in science?
Developed quite early. Actually, I should say my father, though a professional sculptor, was actually an amateur scientist. Natural scientist. He was interested in botany and in geology. And he frequently went collecting fossils from the local rocks, and I would go with him on these trips. But before that, even, I was really very much interested in mechanical things. Living on an abandoned farm like that, there were a lot of things that went on all the time of a mechanical nature, like the water system was always breaking down and it needed needed plumbing, and then we were too far away to be on the electric line initially, and we had our own generating plant, which also needed quite a lot of attention. My father wired the house for electricity when I was about 8 years old, and I was very much interested in that. So I sort of developed an interest in engineering things. And then my uncles, my father's brothers, gave me a chemistry set when I was 8 years old, and that really determined me to be a chemist.
I see. Did you do any experiments that weren't in the manual?
Oh, I certainly did. And when I went to high school, there was another fellow in the same class, Walter Lacusta, who has since become a chemical engineer, L-A-K-U-S-T-A. And he and I used to plan and do a lot of little experiments outside of school.
And did your parents encourage you in this?
They certainly didn't discourage me any.
You went to high school then in... I have here Socrates, was that?
Yes, I went 2 years to Socrates High School in 1932, I think, 34. That was about 10 miles away, and I had to take a bus so that there was no chance for any after-school activities. And my parents got worried about this and decided to send me to boarding school.
I see.
So they sent me to Kent School in Connecticut.
And I'm not
after that.
Familiar where in Connecticut is that?
That's in Kent, Connecticut, which is near Danbury.
Okay.
On the Housatonic River.
Okay. So you had... what was the high school like in Socrates? Did you take any chemistry there?
Yeah, I took general science. I was there 2 years, and second year, I think, I took general science, which was well taught. It was for a country high school, it was quite a good school. Socrates is a town that has some old money in it, and the town was rather better run than you might expect.
And then you took your chemistry at Kent.
Right, I took...
chemistry and physics, eh?
Chemistry and physics, right, at Kent.
Do you remember the names of any of the teachers? Did they...
There was... the chemistry was a priest, actually, named Father Wood. Or Woods, I guess it was. W-O-O-D-S, Woods. Father Woods. But actually, I didn't see a great deal of chemistry because I got sick in the middle of the year and had to drop out of school for... half of the year, so that chemistry I got was only half of the course. But by that time, I knew it all anyway.
Okay, so you already determined that was going to be your area.
Yeah, and I had been reading books. And
what kind of things were you reading?
We had a big textbook about 3 inches thick called, I think, Pharmaceutical Chemistry, which was lying around the house. I believe it was there because my father had been married before to a woman who was a chemist. And I believe this was something she left behind.
Did you have anyone that you could talk to if you're reading something of that nature?
Not really, no. No, this was... there were no other chemists around.
Okay.
No. So I just read the book.
And what about math? Certainly your work was highly mathematical.
Yeah, well, math was the usual high school mathematics. And I did a little bit on my own, I remember, at Kent, going a little beyond the courses occasionally. Something looked really interesting. But mostly I found high school mathematics pretty much a bore.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of drill and not very much inspiration.
That's interesting in the sense that when you did get into chemistry, you were a physical chemist where mathematics played a...
That's right.
Very important part.
I think if I had really known what I've known since, I would not have gone into chemistry. I would have gone into physics. But the high school physics was also a bore.
Mm.
Not that there was anything wrong with the teacher. He was a good teacher, a man named Anders at Kent. But the course was the usual high school course of the time. I had a lot of mechanics. It got a little more interesting when we got into electricity and magnetism. But most of it was very elementary, didn't use hardly any mathematics, and it was really not very exciting.
Did you have any friends at that time during your high school days? Anybody that you...
Well, there's this fellow, Lacusta, I mentioned at Socrates, so we used to do chemistry together. And I had a great many friends, but none of them were particularly scientific.
I see. What kind of laboratory facilities did the school have?
Well, it had the usual high school-type laboratory. I don't remember that any chemistry laboratory. I think the laboratory must have been in the second half of the term when I was sick and out of school. In physics, we had an experimental session about once a week where we used some of the apparatus which was bought from standard supply houses and inclined planes and pulleys and some electricity and magnetism. But actually, I think the teacher sort of demonstrated things more than that. We actually did anything. So I think, looking back on it, I would say there wasn't much laboratory exercise in that physics course. It was mainly demonstrations.
Outside of the mechanical experience you had back at home, that you developed that, the actual laboratory experience...
Very little.
Very little, except again what you were doing.
Except what I was doing on my own, at home. Walter Lacus and I used to boil up things and mix acids and bases and pour acid on metal and make the hydrogen and light it and electrolyze things and all that sort of stuff.
Did you do that in the home or did you have another place?
No, I did it at home. My father finally set up a wooden board workbench so I wouldn't mess up other things.
You said that you had developed your interest in chemistry quite early. What kind of career plans did you develop?
I thought I wanted to be a chemist. I decided I wanted to be a chemist, so I...
Did you have anyone you could talk to develop that?
Not that I remember. Except for my teachers in the school. Really wasn't much one does at that age to develop a career. You go to college after high school, and in college, of course, you have to major in something. At that point, I already determined I was going to major in chemistry. So that was the only choice I really had to make.
The college experience, did your father and mother, were they college graduates, and did you have that background?
My mother had gone to Wellesley 2 years before she dropped out, and my father had gone to art school, but not to college.
Okay. And how did you decide on Columbia?
Oh, that was through the headmaster of the Kent School. He was a Columbia graduate, and he thought he could get me a good scholarship. Actually, he did help. It wasn't quite as good a scholarship as he thought, but anyway, that's how I went to Columbia.
That was, 1938, I believe?
Yeah.
Another question I had meant to ask you earlier was the effect the Depression may have had in...
Oh, yeah. Well, very decided. We were very conscious of money problems all the way to... My father had one large commission that he got in about 1930, or maybe slightly before that, when things were good, and that lasted for about 4 years. It was carving a number of stone reliefs for a church in Philadelphia. And then after that, it was just sort of one little thing after another little thing, and we were very short of money. So I wouldn't say we were poor in the sense that we were a little impoverished, but had to watch money very carefully. I only succeeded in going to Kent School and also to college by the help of scholarships and from help from my mother's family.
I see. What was Columbia like when you arrived there in 1938?
Well, it was, I think, probably much the same as it is today. From my own point of view, it was a bit of a bore in that... curriculum was very structured, which I think was fine. I was glad to do it and get it over with, but it inhibited any creativity so that I didn't have anything very interesting to do in college. In order to raise a little money, I tried making and selling miscellaneous small artworks with the help of my father.
What kind of artworks were they sculpting?
Well, yeah, sculpture. We made ashtrays, for example. I put a Columbia lion motif on an ashtray with a Columbia engraved around the edge, and we made these out of pewter, and I did actually sell a few for, I think, the total sum of about $1.50 a piece. Sold them through the college bookstore and some directly.
Do you recall how much the scholarship was that you had?
$300 a year. And the total expenses for a year were about $900.
So did you do any, well, you supported a little, you had a little income from this activity?
Right, and I occasionally did some tutoring.
I see.
But I didn't have any regular job, like a, you know, job in a cafeteria or anything like that.
Of course, the chemistry department had a real lineup in that, in those days, in terms of the people. Who did you, in terms of faculty in chemistry, who was your first teacher?
In freshman chemistry, it was Ray Crist, C-R-I-S-T. He was a photochemist. And then analytical chemistry, there was a man named Zanetti, Z-A-N-E-T-T-I, taught qualitative analysis. You want me to go through the list while we're at it now?
Sure.
Then Beans, H.T. Beans, was quantitative analysis. Nelson, we all called him Pop Nelson. There's organic chemistry. And the laboratory was run by Charlie Dawson, D-A-W-S-O-N. Which was actually the first place I really encountered any of the faculty to talk to in that organic laboratory. Previously, everything had been such large scale, large classes. Well, except for the freshman chemistry, which was a small class, but that was just a lecture class, and you know, the professor came in, lectured, and went out. Then there's physical chemistry, a man whom I got to know quite well, Jake Bieber. And, yeah, I had an organic analysis course from Dawson also. And that was essentially it.
I assume from what you said, there wasn't even a laboratory with general chemistry the first year?
Yeah, there was. There was a one afternoon a week laboratory, which was not very interesting. It was not the experiments might not have been interesting, but there was such a rush. We had to go in there, rush through the experiment, write up the notes, and get out. And there wasn't really any time to enjoy yourself investigating anything.
Who was it you started talking to first in terms of the faculty? Was it Nelson? Dawson?
Dawson, I would say, yeah. Dawson. And then Beaver. Beaver ran a very personal approach type physical chemistry lab, so that he was somebody that one could really talk to.
Mm-hmm. And what did you discuss with him? Did you talk about?
Oh, mainly about, well, about the experiments we were doing principally.
And this would have been the extent of the chemistry requirements for a BS degree?
Yeah, that's right. Those are the chemistry requirements. Normally one would take more. What happened was I got through in 3 years in one summer session and rather unexpectedly got through. So I continued right on in graduate school there. I didn't even apply to graduate school until the summer, the last summer session. And this was unexpected, as I say, because the way Columbia worked in those days, you got extra credit if you got an A in a course. And by getting enough A's, I accumulated enough extra credits so I didn't have to take a full senior year. But I didn't know that was going to happen until very near the end. So I didn't have any time to explore around for graduate school. So, and also the war was just starting, or just about ready to start at that point. This was 1941. So I was in a hurry. Graft was already in operation. I was in a hurry. So I went directly on to graduate school. Didn't have any senior year, essentially. Otherwise, I would have presumably taken more courses.
And you didn't do any kind of research at the undergraduate level?
No, no. Well, Columbia actually didn't have any such program at the time anyway, even if I had stayed another year.
And did you have any take any math courses?
Yeah, I took...
Is that a better experience than what you had in high school?
Well, it's hard to say. I took analytic geometry and calculus first term, which was at differential calculus, and then because of interference of courses in the chemistry program, I couldn't take the integral calculus. So the following summer, I studied up on my own and took a test to pass the requirement for the course, which Columbia did allow you to do. And then I took the last term of calculus at the same time I was taking physical chemistry. So really, I only had elementary courses, and the one thing I did is study up on my own. It was an interesting experience, the first time I ever done something like that. Probably I got more out of that than taking a course.
And did you have any physics at this time, too?
1 year physics course, yeah, and that was a big lecture course with a one-session-a-week laboratory. It was a good course. I found it rather interesting, though it was pretty much the cut-and-dry type of thing. I think the most interesting part was electricity and magnetism, which was... But again, it was a course without much mathematics, so that it was a bit dull from that point of view. The fellow I had in the laboratory, ran the laboratory, was at that point a young instructor named Polycarp Cush, who subsequently got a Nobel Prize. He ran a good laboratory, really kept you on your toes. Though it was very elementary material.
Did you have any interaction with him on a personal basis?
Nothing very significant. I mean, I talked to him, of course, but nothing that would you would call significant in any big way.
That you said then that summer session was the summer of 41, so it was at the end of that summer that the war heating up.
I applied to graduate school right at Columbia, and they immediately put me to work as a teaching assistant with Beaver in that same physical chemistry lab I just finished.
I see. And what happened once the war broke out?
War broke out that fall. Well, everything just kept on going for a while, but then gradually effects began to appear. A lot of people dropped out of teaching and went into the Manhattan Project. Harold Urey, for example, was teaching a course in atomic physics that I was taking that fall, and he started the course, but he gradually disappeared from the lectures, and other people came in to fill in.
He was chairman of the department then,
and he was chairman of the department also, yeah.
I think it may be one of those review articles that either you or Walter Stockmeyer wrote, that after the war started, Urey indicated that the war would be won by applied science and that people shouldn't rush off to join.
Yeah, that was Stockmeyer who said that. Stockmeyer was already an instructor and at the time, and I was just a beginning graduate student, so I wasn't in on those meetings.
I see. Evidently, you weren't about to rush off and join anyways.
No. I guess I registered for the draft that fall and was waiting for them to come around.
So that first year, I mean, we'll get into what you did in terms of the light scattering in a moment, but in that first year, you simply were an assistant, did some teaching, and took the standard introductory courses. Is that
That's right, yeah. And study for the qualifying exam at the end of the year.
What other courses besides Urey's course?
A thermodynamics course taught by V.K. Lemaire. And a course in phase rule taught by same Jake Beaver that I was being a teaching assistant with. And there's a course in physical organic chemistry, so-called, which was actually a course in macromolecules, so not under that title.
That's interesting.
That was taught by Charlie Beckman, who was a starch chemist.
What was the orientation of that course? Was it mostly natural products?
It was physical, really physical chemistry of macromolecules insofar as was known at the time. He discussed random walks, I believe. He talked about spectroscopic methods, x-rays, well, I guess more specifically, x-ray and electron scattering. First time I was exposed to Fourier transforms, to amount of anything. What else did he cover? Oh, he talked about hydrodynamic methods, sedimentation, viscosity. At the time, it all seemed to me a very ad hoc subject, but I guess I absorbed some of it nonetheless. He had an interesting style of lecturing. not very rigorous. When the minus sign came out in the wrong place, he just changed it to a plus sign, but he covered the material. Plus, I also had a course of quantum mechanics from George Kimball, who was at the time helping to write the book Eyring, Waldron, and Kimball, but it was not yet out.
Did you use notes then?
I used notes. He gave a beautiful set of lectures, which was possible to take notes on accurately. It's not usually possible. At the end of the term, I ended up with a very good set of interesting notes, but that was really all. There was no homework, so there was no chance to practice anything that he preached, and it was essentially an exposure to a lot of beautiful stuff without any real understanding.
How did he examine you then, or test you on?
I suppose we had a written exam at the end of some kind. I don't remember now. It couldn't have been anything very demanding.
And this was all before you passed the qualifying exam?
The quantum mechanics was in the spring term. The qualifying exam was near the end of the spring term, so the two overlapped.
Any other texts that you may have used in that early graduate work?
Let's see now. There should have been another course in there somewhere. Maybe that's all the courses I took that first year. Because I was studying for the qualifying. I think that must have been just about it.
Did Urey use any text, Lemaire?
Yeah, Lemaire used Lewis and Randall.
Okay.
He had his own copy of Lewis and Randall, an interleaved edition, in which he had written his notes in between the other pages. So every once in a while he would surprise us by getting something apparently out of the book which was not in our copies. After a while we learned what was going on. He used books by Hertzberg on atomic spectrum and structure, yes. And molecular spectrum and structure.
Was that was he rigorous in the classroom, in his lectures?
It was rather descriptive material about atomic spectra and structure, so that I don't think rigor is quite the word that one would apply. But no, I think he was accurate. He, opposed to, say, Beckman's course, which was not always accurate in detail. I think Urey's was, I don't remember any time when we ever found that he was saying something that didn't agree with the book. And in Lemaire's course, that did occasionally happen, too. Beckman didn't use a text. Kimball didn't use a text. Beaver used a text called Phase Rule by a man named Findlay, F-I-N-D-L-A-Y. I still have it, I think. It was just a catalog of interesting phase transitions of various kinds.
In these other courses, you mentioned that in the quantum mechanics, you never had a chance to practice any of what was being presented. Did the other courses give you that opportunity?
In the thermodynamics, we had a lot of homework. Lemaire did assign a lot of homework every week, and we had to come in and put problems on the board. We would assign one problem to a particular student to put on the board. So we had a lot of practice in thermodynamics, which I think was a good thing, because Lewis and Randall as a textbook was not a very deep textbook, but it did have a lot of practical examples in it. Mm-hmm.